Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning medical briefing with Dr. Kevin Mose, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. It's a good day again to go out for a walk. And according to this new study, Dr. Mose, this is really good, especially for seniors, right?
Absolutely, Bob. You know, we always talk about setting a goal for how many steps you're going to take in a day, and that's one way that we make sure that seniors stay active. And this study came out showing that if a normal goal, or a lot of seniors have a goal of somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 steps, but we know that if you get to 7,000 steps, the difference is dramatic as far as your blood pressure. So get to 7,000. If you're normally at 4 or 5, you're going to see your blood pressure decrease by 7 points on the systolic, on the high number, and 4 points on the diastolic. This is big enough that individuals who are borderline hypertension could come off their medication if they continue to do this exercising.
And this study looked at people starting at age 68. Was it just men, do we know?
Who knows? It was men and women, but actually it was. It was older women, older men and women between the ages of 68 and 78. So it's not like, oh, this only works for those individuals who are in their 50s. No, matter of fact, it shows that it is really more important for that age group of over, that are in their 70s and the importance of this. And I would say, too, Bob, that, the other thing with walking is it really works on our balance. So it helps us keep our balance because falls are one of our biggest problems as we age. And also there's a social dynamic. Often people go out walking. They'll be walking with other individuals. So they're not sitting at home, doing nothing. They're out doing something.
Mm-hmm. Did the study tell us anything about how fast you need to walk or how far?
No, it's interesting. We say, oh, well, I bet you have to walk a lot faster. And it's really the volume of steps, not the I had to walk it continuously. You can walk, step, stop, walk, step, stop, and nothing about the speed. So it really came down to putting, a monitor on them and just seeing their total steps. So the individual says, well, I can only walk, 1,000 steps before I get tired. Okay, break that up throughout the day, but if you still hit that 7,000 mark, you're going to see this impact on your blood pressure.
I was reading a story the other day about what happens if you exercise but you don't eat well. And this was about people who are thin, but they can still be unhealthy, can't they?
Oh, 100%. We look at exercise and say, oh my gosh, if you're exercising that much, your heart must be in great shape and everything else must be. But no, if your diet is poor or if your genetics are poor, you can still have high cholesterol. You could still have high blood pressure. So there are different diseases that, although you think you're skinny and everything looks good, diet as well as exercise is really going to make your impact on your health. Not one or the other.
This term skinny fat, now this is mainly about the excess fat that people will have around their midsection, and that's the bad stuff, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, where we would rather have some more fat would be in your legs or in your butt, mainly because it's a cushion for us if we were to fall. But we know from a health point of view that fat around our midsection is bad for our heart and bad for blood pressure as well.
Yeah, visceral fat, I guess. And
correct.
It actually wraps around your organs, doesn't it?
It does. It's the bad fat. The good fat is going to be more into your muscles, where this is just sitting there in clumps on your abdomen.
And when you see patients, are you concerned with BMI, body mass index, or do you just look at total weight usually? I guess we should look at more than total weight, according to what we're reading lately, huh?
Well, yeah, and BMI has really fallen out of favor here. We used to look at BMI all the time. BMI above 25, you're considered obese. But really, when we looked at that, the study was done on a small group of individuals and really does not tell the good story. So we're really getting away from BMI and starting to look at what's your fat, what's your fat percentage, what's your exercise, we're getting away from just the simple BMI number and saying what we really need to do is get a better look at your total health and don't focus just on that number.
Continuing now with Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. In McHenry County, marijuana dispensaries now have to post in-store signage warning of marijuana's potential link to psychotic disorders such as schizophrenia, increased thoughts of suicide and suicide attempts, anxiety and depression. This is alarming. What do we know about this, Dr. Most?
Yeah, Bob, it's interesting. This is the first in the country to have to post this. So McHenry County, their state's attorney, decided to go with this. And it's very interesting because when we look at marijuana, we don't have enough studies done. Why? Because it's still illegal federally, so it's very difficult to do studies on it. But what we do know is we've looked at studies that have been done in other countries where it's more widely used and more legal. And a study in Denmark actually showed that young men, more than young women, but young men who use cannabis quite a bit have an increased chance of schizophrenia and depression. Hmm. So when we look at it, we have to think about it, okay, how are we going to do a controlled study, which is going to be difficult to do? So we are going to have to take a lot of these anecdotal stories or anecdotal studies and start to look at it. We have to understand, too, that our brain continues to progress until about the age of 25. At the age of 25, our brain is fully developed. So individuals who are smoking between the ages of, we'll say, 15 and 25, those are the group that we're looking at. That they have a much higher chance of going on towards schizophrenia or depression. So it'll be interesting to see as it gets legalized in more areas, if we ever get to a federal legalization, we're going to find out more about marijuana that we probably never thought of.
What do we know about the chemicals that you find in cannabis and tobacco smoke?
I mean, we know that there's carcinogens, right? So when we look at carcinogens in tobacco smoke, there's hundreds of carcinogens in tobacco smoke. Certainly less in marijuana. However, the filtering portion of cigarettes, does it take out some of them? Very few. But if you're going to look and try to compare the two between cigarette smoke and marijuana and say which one has the bigger carcinogenic effect or which one has more chemicals in it, certainly it's going to look towards the cigarettes. So from that point of view, from a health point of view for cancers and other illnesses, marijuana is safer than tobacco. But you don't smoke two packs of marijuana in a day, where individuals will smoke, you know, multiple cigarettes, obviously.
And there obviously are some health benefits for some people with cannabis, correct?
Well, 100%. You know, listeners that are out there are probably saying, wait a second, Kevin, you know, you have to remember that this is the only thing that got me through my chemotherapy. You know, people who take chemotherapy often will have, you know, nausea and terrible nausea and vomiting. And what the marijuana does is takes that away, allows individuals to take in the nutrients they need to continue to fight the cancer that they're fighting with chemotherapy. So certainly, that is very helpful. Others who have bad anxiety and don't want to take, you know, Xanax or take some of those other medications, marijuana can also, you know, decrease anxiety in some individuals. So certainly there are appropriate uses for it in talking to your doctor from the medicinal side as well as the recreational side to make sure we're using it safely.
Got a couple of minutes left here. Let's get some listener questions in. Bob, can you ask Dr. Most, what is the vitamin regimen he would recommend when someone gets COVID? I recall vitamin D and niacin, but there were a few others. I think Tylenol maybe, but it helped me last time I got COVID again. What about that, Doc?
Yeah, I mean, Tylenol, when you have COVID, certainly it'll help you keep that fever down. Decreases temperature and pain reliever, so certainly that will help. The Tylenol, obviously not a vitamin. If we're going to look at vitamins, there's been studies that have been done on vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. Matter of fact, some of those studies are still going on. So when I look at that, and I would say, if you're looking at it from a basis of, here we're trying to fight off an illness, what are the biggest vitamins that we're concerned about? It would be C and D. Those are the biggest vitamins that boost our immune system. And we know that zinc has been used for years because it slows the replication of viruses, but not a good study has been done on it, but they are being done. So I would say if you're going to take a good multivitamin, get outside to get your vitamin D from the sun. You're still able to do that here. You know, a day like today is going to be perfect for it. And if not, make sure you're taking, you know, vitamin D, vitamin C. And you can try a zinc supplement as well, if you'd like, while you're on COVID. When you're not on COVID, when you're not being infected with COVID, don't worry about the zinc. The zinc is not going to do anything to help you from preventing COVID.
And finally, quite a few listeners asking this same question about getting over COVID and then wondering how long to wait before getting the newest vaccine.
Yeah, you know, with the vaccine out now, that's a really popular question because it's like, wait, I was just sick, should I get the vaccine now? If you were just sick, you have 90 days of protection, natural immunity. And the beauty of it is that you got sick with the strain that is circulating right now versus the vaccine, which is the strain from before. So I always tell people, you're great coverage right now. If you've just gotten over here in the last week or so, you've got great coverage all the way, you know, past Thanksgiving into December, even into early January. So waiting to take that vaccine right around the holidays at Christmas time would be very appropriate, but you're going to have great protection, great natural immunity now. So no worries to rush and get that at this point.
Dr. Kevin Mullis, Northwestern Medicine. Let's all go out for a nice, long, and speedy walk today. Thanks, Doc. Talk to you next week.
You got it, Bob. We'll talk soon.